Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Pulse. We are switching back to our legislative session here in Oklahoma to bring you some more news on some great legislation that is flying through and has got bipartisan support that we really want to bring some great attention to. We are also joined by David Gately.
So first, thank you, Ashley, Michael, everyone at OCJR for having me on today to talk about something as important as courts, fines, and fees. As you said, my name is David Gately. I'm the criminal justice policy analyst at the Oklahoma Policy Institute. A little bit about OPI or Oklahoma Policy Institute. We are a nonpartisan, independent policy think tank. So we really attempt to advance equitable and fiscally responsible policies that really expand opportunities for Oklahomans. We do that through research, analysis, advocacy. But my part in that is looking at the criminal justice or criminal legal system and finding policies that help to create thriving and safe communities. So again, thank you so much for having me on to talk about such an important topic.
We actually have two bills that we are going to be highlighting. It's going to be Senate Bill 1458 and Senate Bill 1532. But before we get into that, David, I'd love for you to speak a little bit on what Oklahoma's current state is surrounding fines and fees, how it's used and how it's impacting people, kind of what the landscape looks like.
Sure. I think first it's important to kind of point out the context historically of Oklahoma when it comes to mass incarcerations. As many listeners may know, Oklahoma has been at the top or near the top of incarceration levels in the nation and really the world. We've made some great progress, but just to look at the raw numbers, right now we still have about 21,000 people incarcerated in Oklahoma, another 26,000 under some form of supervision. And so that still puts us at about third in the nation for incarceration. I also want to point out that we're near the top or the top for incarceration of women in the world. And so when we look at incarceration, there is the part of being actually in prison or jail, but there's also the point of the fines and fees that come along with those convictions. And even if you don't spend time in prison for a conviction, you still have large amounts of fines and fees. The big piece that unites these conversations is that we really have created a misery machine of overwhelming burdens on families that they simply can't handle. So I think it's important to point out that when we talk about criminal justice and point out this misery machine, it's not necessarily accidental. This is not a bug of the system, but it's actually a feature of the system that creates deliberate economic, social, political repercussions in the communities that are targeted the most. So it's been designed and implemented for decades. And these communities that I speak of are typically communities of color, Black and Brown people. In fact, you can look at heat maps of fines and fees and shows that these affect predominantly communities of color. I think that that's kind of the context. These add up. They will typically, the fines and fees debt or criminal court debt will stay with somebody for years, potentially even decades, after the conviction. It really is a burden that overwhelms individuals in the criminal legal system. I would say that's the context that we're looking at.
Mass incarceration is something that we find coming up in all of our episodes, pretty much no matter what we talk about. Mike, I know you actually published a blog piece for us about poverty and how it looks in Oklahoma and also its makeup when it comes to race and ethnicity.
It's pretty interesting. I think we can all surmise a link between poverty and property crimes, as in people who are impoverished are more likely to commit crimes that revolve around property because they are looking to raise their wealth at any cost. So that makes sense. But there's also an interesting link between poverty and violent crime, specifically with income inequality. The higher the income inequality is in an area, the more likely it is to have a higher violent crime rate. And so paradoxically, putting all these fines and fees on criminal defendants is actually working to keep them impoverished and increase the crime rate. This system is not helping public safety or recidivism either. And I think that's just an interesting point.
Definitely. We have real life data that's showing that it's not working. Oklahoma specifically, as you were saying, David, that this is a feature of how Oklahoma is created in terms of their fines and fees. What do the fines and fees in Oklahoma actually look like? What do they fund and where are they coming from?
I think that's important that this is intended to be this way. And that's because we really have created a perverse incentive structure behind court or criminal court fines and fees, or just court debt generally. So courts gather the majority of their funding from court fines and fees instead of tax dollars. So I think some numbers I've seen as little as 5% of their funding comes from tax dollars. The rest comes from the backs of some of the poorest people in our community on court debt. What this means is that a function of our law enforcement, police and prosecutors, is to actually ensure that those fines and fees are collected to keep the lights on in these courts and these law enforcement agencies. And to quote some DAs, they believe that raising this kind of funding or this funding method off the backs of the poorest individuals is amoral. This is a scheme, you know, it incentivizes more prosecution, incentivizes more arrest. The reality is there's a limit to how much people can pay, right? Which means that something like 70% of criminal court debt is never collected. It's never paid. This leaves our courts underfunded, as I mentioned, because it's their primary source of funding. But it also underfunds vital services that we think of through courts, like victim services or diversion programs, like drug court or mental health court or veteran court. All of those remain underfunded because of this scheme of funding from criminal court fines and fees. Also, it leaves our communities of people drained of money, and it makes them even less trustful of the courts and services and law enforcement, more so than they already are. And this goes to what Mike was saying. The last, I think, piece I want to bring up, and most insidious piece, is we really do criminalize things like poverty in Oklahoma and being unhoused. So if someone is unable to pay a court-issued fine or fee, they can be sent back to prison. They can be locked up. And so it continues this cycle of non-payment, arrest, incarceration, and then insurmountable court debt. And I want to point to one recent study that was actually done in Oklahoma County. It was by a group of Columbia researchers, Harvard researchers, that highlights this. Their study concluded that court debt charged to defendants, it actually neither caused nor deterred new crime. So it's not used as a deterrent. Again, we're not thinking of this as something that if we have a really high skyrocketing court fine, then it'll make people less likely to commit crime. Well, that's not true. And in fact, it causes worse issues in the long run. And also there's no government benefit to this. As I pointed out, we're just draining courts of valuable resources. When we criminalize this kind of behavior and then we put it on the lowest income individuals to pay these fines and fees, we place them at risk for ongoing court involvement. That's the perverse system that we've created off the backs of the poorest of our neighbors.
From my knowledge, it's also disproportionately affecting communities that are more rural. Do you see that as well?
Absolutely. So not just communities of color that I mentioned before, but rural Oklahomans frequently carry larger burdens for court fines and fees. So predominantly rural counties, like think Rogers County or Adair or Garfield County, are actually assessed more per person than the residents of more urban counties. So like Tulsa or Oklahoma or Cleveland County. And so Oklahoma's lowest income communities and rural counties are effectively subsidizing courts in Oklahoma and Tulsa County. So that data actually comes from Open Justice Oklahoma, which is a project of the Oklahoma Policy Institute. But I encourage you to go check out that research that we've done. You can see in graph format these really exorbitant amounts of fines and fees in rural counties.
With that under our belt and seeing kind of where we are today, we can see why it would be a priority to make legislation to kind of start to chip away at this massive problem that's affecting so many Oklahomans. Can you give us a rundown of a bill that's going to help us start to chip away at this massive issue?
Sure. So let's start with Senate Bill 1458, which is sponsored and written by Senator Roger Thompson. So again, this is Senate Bill 1458. And what this does essentially is it eliminates certain executive agency fees. So when we're talking about fines and fees are different. So there's fines and there are fees. And one problem with a lot of the fines and fees that we see is that many of the fees that are tacked on actually go to things that are not even tied to the court at all. So they may go fund administrative agencies that have no dealings with the criminal or legal system. And so this bill would remove a large amount. I don't want to go down the whole list. There's quite a few, but would remove a large amount of these administrative fees. And so what this does is it reduces the burden that is placed on individuals when they're convicted of a crime, ensures that a lot of the funds that are being funded through these tax dollars that I mentioned, maybe they don't have anything to do with the criminal justice system, but they may still provide vital services elsewhere. Those will be funded through tax dollars and through actual appropriations by the legislature and not off the back of the poorest. As I mentioned before, 70% of these criminal court debt is never collected. That's underfunding things all over the board. We'll be removing that and then replacing the money with actual appropriated dollars. Some of those provisions in Senate Bill 1458 would be things like eliminates the supervision fee paid by parolees as a condition of parole. And it eliminates things like trauma care fees, where they're paying fees for trauma care. So it would be removing those, again, replacing them with tax money, and then remove those fees off the backs of the poorest in our communities. That is still waiting on a vote in the full Senate, but it has passed through committee and is working its way through. This is a good piece of legislation. It has an estimated $40 to $60 million fiscal impact.
That reminds me of something that I learned shortly after starting at OCJR, do our What's Wednesday series. And whenever I was first looking at fines and fees, and I learned that people have usually a $50 a day fee for every day that they're on parole, having to pay every single day is burdensome, which is interesting. And that also brings another $50 thing that comes to mind is a lot of individuals, a fee that they are assessed is a $50 fee to even apply for a public defender. So a lot of fees like that, that you don't think of, and then they end up adding up, like you're saying, it gets just this insurmountable amount at the end.
Right. It's become like kind of a dumping ground for state revenue that they don't want to just allocate. Instead, they just put it on a criminal conviction or through court debt. You point out just an application fee. Senate Bill 1458 would actually eliminate, for example, drug abuse education and treatment fees. So sometimes individuals are forced to take a drug abuse and treatment assessment. They have to pay for that assessment, even though it's court ordered. Individuals who may already be struggling financially are then forced to pay for things that are court ordered. It just adds up. It feels endless, I guess, is what I'm saying, when one thing after another that you're required to pay for, but you may not be able to.
We're also, by removing some of these burdens and some of these ways that things have always been done, we are then going to be able to focus on other things as well. And hopefully it's this snowball of, we might just be chipping away at a small part of the criminal legal system when we are talking about these individualized bills. But the bigger picture is that now people will be able to put their resources elsewhere. And like David has been saying, other resources will be able to get more funding as well in the long term, more stable funding, which is very important.
The piece on stable is important because, as we've mentioned, this is an unstable source of funding. And also to your point, chipping away, I think Senate Bill 1458 is a great example of that because it's not eliminating all fees completely, but it's being targeted at what makes sense. What can we eliminate and remove a burden on individuals? I also think it represents an understanding that the status quo, I guess, that we've been doing, the way we've been doing things isn't really working. And they're starting to build a coalition of bipartisan lawmakers who understand this and see that the time is now to really make these changes. Even if it is a chipping away, we can start to recognize that some of these fines and fees aren't doing what they're supposed to do. And in fact, they're actually harming our systems.
We're spending a lot of time talking about how these affect the individual who's assessed these fines and fees, but I'm curious about the effects on the local, primarily rural economies that they exist in.
Imagine you have a community who has a large population or some population of individuals who are still paying fines and fees, maybe for a conviction that occurred years and years ago. They're having to take money that could be spent in the community. So things like maybe spending money on their children or shopping in the community, or being able to afford things like groceries. Instead, they're having to take money and pay it to a court system. That's money, that's millions of dollars drained from these communities all over the state, whether it's rural or urban. That money is coming out of the pockets of our neighbors and being put into court systems instead of into the local economies. A metaphor that we like to use is this Netflix model of funding. We fund courts in Oklahoma the same way that Netflix or Hulu is, through fee for service. And so all of those fees for service of courts is being pulled out of the community.
We have been able to talk about the great things that this bill would do. So what is it that SB 1532 will do, either in conjunction or separately, to kind of help chip away again at this massive issue of fines and fees in Oklahoma?
This one is a little different, but again, it's a great step towards chipping away at fines and fees in Oklahoma. So Senate Bill 1532, as you mentioned, this is authored by Senator Julie Daniels, and it's actually passed the Senate 45-0 already. So it's on its way to the House. The 45-0 vote really illustrates court debt and the criminal fines and fees has broad support. But what this bill does is it's twofold. First, it clearly gives judges the authority to waive fines and fees completely in particular cases. So it gives them statutory authority to waive fines and fees completely for those in and out of Department of Corrections custody, so who had been in prison. But it also provides, and this is the really key piece, is it provides debt forgiveness for those who've consistently paid their fines and fees for a set period of time. If an individual has paid their fines and fees 48 months, then judges will waive that completely. And so what this does is it really kind of right-sizes criminal court debt by providing defendants more incentive to pay. It makes those payments more reasonable, more attainable. They have an understanding that once they've reached the consistent payments, then it'll be forgiven completely. It really is providing debt forgiveness for Oklahomans who've made a good faith effort to pay. And really, it's likely to increase collections and really strengthen courts, I think, in the long run. Provides not only the judges the authority to waive fines and fees, but it also does provide a path for debt forgiveness for individuals who are making a good faith effort at paying those fines and fees.
A anecdote that everyone will be able to hear more of here in the end, when we pivot our episode a little bit to lived experience individuals, is we have an ambassador who works for Oklahomans for Criminal Justice Reform. And when she finished her time in the justice system, she came out with $250,000 in fines and fees. Just one individual, just one person, including one of the charges that is very commonly talked about also in Oklahoma, the $10,000 automatic drug trafficking fine that happens for a lot of individuals. Just think of that number. I mean, she's been paying on it now for years, and to my knowledge has two jobs. She has children that she also still provides for. Thing we've slightly touched on but haven't gone too far into is what it looks like for these individuals to be getting jobs. There's so many jobs that are just not available to individuals after they have a felony conviction or after they have a conviction at all. And so these people are really usually tied, unfortunately, to low-paying or minimum wage jobs, yet they are facing this insane mountain. I mean, like more than a house of fines and fees just from one conviction. And so we will get to hear that straight from her here at the end. I think it's important to contextualize that here too, when we're talking about this legislation. Like, that's a real human being who's going to potentially see life-changing benefits from this bill.
Absolutely. And I think that that's the goal behind this kind of legislation, is that we really do want to incentivize people to make those payments. And we want to reward them for making those timely payments by just waiving them completely. And I think that's a great point to bring up. Nobody, at least in my imagination, would be able to pay a $250,000 court debt. I mean, that's just out of the realm of possibility. And so this gives a pathway to just wipe that away completely in certain circumstances.
From 2012 to 2018, there remains $630 million in outstanding court debt, and that's debt that they haven't collected and most likely never will. The unemployment rate for justice-involved individuals in Oklahoma is 5 times higher than the state average. And when you combine that with failure to pay warrants, which I believe there was 40,000 issued in Tulsa and Oklahoma counties alone from 2018 to 2020, when you combine those with the unemployment rate and destructive per capita family debt these fines and fees create, it's just paralyzing local economies.
Know that you have said a few numbers here and there, but when you're looking at each bill, just kind of like right off the bat, do we have projected numbers of how much money this will save?
I don't have solid numbers on that. What I can say is that, and as Mike mentioned, we have communities where I would probably estimate hundreds of millions of dollars across the state is flowing towards courts instead of into local economies. So I know that there would be savings to the state. One thing I want to point out too, when it comes to collecting fines and fees, many studies have shown that efforts to collect this debt, so to keep the lights on in the court, it actually costs the court and municipalities and states more money than they actually collect in revenue. So one study I saw, it costs more than a dollar, so something like $1.18 for every dollar they collected in criminal fines and fees. Again, they're spending more money to actually collect this debt. So imagine if we just appropriated it through tax money and law enforcement can be used for actual public safety instead of just as debt collectors in communities.
It does sound like this would have huge impacts for so many Oklahomans personally, but also, like you've said, so many communities who will benefit from being able to invest in their own people again, having more resources, having more money. With this in mind, we know that you guys have other bills that you guys have that just continue to kind of put money back in people's pockets here in Oklahoma.
One I want to point out to listeners that deal with fines and fees is House Bill 3205. And so what this would do would reduce a court debt that we put on children. So this would significantly reduce court costs assessed to children in Oklahoma's juvenile justice system. It would get rid of things like cost of counsel fees. It would remove things like cost of treatment, the cost of probation and supervision fees. It doesn't eliminate or reduce restitution, which is important. That's used to compensate victims. It also doesn't change any of the current penalties or fines. It does go a long way in removing fees on children. We can really reduce the financial stress on families through legislation like this. And also, it's more fiscally responsible probation services. By reducing the fee burdens on struggling families, we can financially benefit entire communities. When we look at children specifically, you know, we know that 1 in 5 Oklahoman children live in poverty in Oklahoma. We know that 1 in 10 Oklahoma children don't have health insurance. They don't have access to addiction and mental health treatment. This is somewhere we can find broad support that I think it's high time for us to stop putting debt on children and the most vulnerable in our communities. It's already passed committee. We're hoping that it'll be heard on the floor soon and then passed and sent to the governor.
So in Oklahoma, we are over-criminalizing certain age brackets. Our study shows that we are incarcerating 18-year-olds at 77% the national average, and that continues on to we're incarcerating 65-plus individuals to more than 72% higher than the national average.
For most people, I would assume that it can be shocking to think, wait, we put fines and fees, criminal fines and fees on children in the state of Oklahoma. You know, like 14-year-olds have fines and fees. How will they pay that? How is that supposed to do anything for their rehabilitation? That financial strain, it also negatively impacts siblings of justice-involved youth. You know, when a family resources are going towards legal costs of another child, parents inevitably have fewer resources for the other children living in the household. So it creates these family stressors. I want to point out too, Oklahoma Policy Institute and our wonderful youth justice policy analyst, Ashley Harvey, has been putting together a youth justice report that'll be coming out in a few weeks that really details the horrible outcomes for youth justice in the state of Oklahoma, and fines and fees are part of that.
Definitely one of the triggers of ACES is having a family member who is incarcerated, and ACES is adverse childhood experiences. And we've seen that ACES leads to an individual being more likely to be incarcerated themselves. And so we often talk about this in the context of having a parent who's incarcerated, but it goes through all of the family structure as well.
A person with a high number of adverse childhood experiences during their childhood are more likely to go to prison. 59.9% of female prisoners reported experience four or more adverse childhood experiences during their childhood, compared to 8.5% of the general population. And people with four or more ACEs in their own childhood also were shown to be 4.7 more times likely to use drugs. So that's the cycle that we're talking about, is that if you have a family member incarcerated, that creates adverse childhood experiences for those children, and then those children are more likely to go to prison.
Absolutely. You know, when Oklahoma Policy Institute spent this last summer listening to community members, one of the stories we heard from a young man, he said that the financial burden of these criminal court fines and fees, in order to pay them and help his family out, he actually resorted to more crimes to pay those fines and fees. So really, you can see how this cycle is really insidious. It can really cause continued involvement with the justice system just to pay for criminal court fines and fees.
Right. Is there, David, any other legislation that you'd like to highlight as well?
When we're thinking about these collateral consequences, or the consequences of having a felony record, for example, that can last well after somebody is released from prison or jail, we've been looking at ways that can help remove those burdens. And one of those is House Bill 3316, just passed the House last week. That would create an automatic expungement system in the state of Oklahoma. It wouldn't change the qualifying or eligibility requirements. It would just make the system, the paper system that we have now, into a computer system. This would open the doors for individuals who are seeking an expungement in the state. That's one I want to point out. And then I know that OCJR in this podcast has focused on Senate Bill 1646 as well. You know, Oklahoma Policy Institute is supportive of that. Those are the kind of pieces of legislation we're looking at.
Mike and I had the opportunity this past interim session to be able to consolidate some of the information that was given to legislators before they moved into this legislative session. And we created some white papers as a result to, again, just try to bring all of that data right to people's feet, basically, so they don't have to watch the sometimes 11 hours worth of information that was presented to some of these legislators.
One estimate I've seen is that automatic expungement or clean slate in the state of Oklahoma, if passed, would affect 100,000 already eligible Oklahomans for expungement. So these are individuals who can't access the current expungement, even though, again, they're eligible for one. They can't access it because they can't afford the fees associated. They can't afford an attorney. They can't take the time off work to go through the court process. And so what this would do would open those doors, remove those barriers by making the process automatic instead of the petition process that we have now. Again, it doesn't change eligibility. It just opens those doors for individuals who are already eligible for expungement.
To contextualize some of this, what it truly means for some individuals, when we were consolidating this information for the white paper, there's an anecdote from a woman named Sarah, who's a Tulsa resident, and she said, "I went to an expungement event in Tulsa in 2019, and the lawyers there were finally able to help me clear my old record. Since then, I've got a better paying job, my kids and I have moved to a better neighborhood, and I've started going to school remotely last year. I'm so grateful I've gotten the chance to build a better life for my kids. I think so many people out there who mess up when they are just kids, they just need another chance." Giving this opportunity into the hands of people, it can change their whole life.
Absolutely. And you know, you bring up the expungement fairs, which there have been a few over the last year or so in Oklahoma. And that just shows, it really illustrates the need for an expungement for so many of our community members when there are lines out the door before the place has even opened up. These are individuals who know the benefits that an expungement can have on their lives. It opens the door for things like education and housing and employment opportunities. So just look at those lines, and I encourage you to look at the pictures of those expungement fairs. This can open the doors for so many people through an automatic or clean slate system.
And a note I also wanted to make, as you said, these people already qualify, but some of these people qualify because they had a no-file case or no charges were ever brought. It's not just that these people even made it through our criminal legal system. Some people's cases are still haunting them and they never even went in front of the court. I think that's important to contextualize who we're talking about. This group of people is massive.
Absolutely. And, you know, we've mentioned the collateral consequences of those records. And if, say, an employer looks up your record, and maybe it's just an arrest record, but still that can prevent you from gaining employment. This would help seal that without having to go through a costly process. I think that that is a great point to bring up, that it's not just conviction records. There's so many records that are associated with the criminal legal system that can haunt individuals for years and years after. Clean slate would really help remedy that.
So as people are listening to this podcast, and if they feel moved to get involved, they feel really passionate about some of the things they've heard here today, what can they do? How can they get involved? How can they stay up to date on this information? What would you advise?
Well, I think first and most importantly is reach out to your lawmaker. So that can go a long way in just having a conversation with them and discussing why these issues matter to you and why they should support them. But then also get involved with an organization like Oklahomans for Criminal Justice Reform or like Oklahoma Policy Institute. We have an advocacy project called Together Oklahoma, and we have a criminal justice group that sits down and discusses legislation and discusses policy. I would encourage you to get involved with something like that, with like-minded individuals who maybe could give you the tools and the resources to even continue your own individual advocacy. Reach out and gather resources where you can elsewhere. So read up on the issues that matter to you. Reach out to experts and others if you have a question. It takes all of us and broad coalitions to get these things passed, particularly when it comes to criminal justice. So just encourage individuals to get plugged in with like-minded individuals, find advocacy that works for you.
I think it's important to bring back up what we were talking about earlier about being able to chip away. We know that the problem of mass incarceration, the problem of all of the things that come out of the criminal legal system that is unfortunately in place in so many states is daunting and it's huge. But even just these small measures that we're doing each session, these bills that we're putting up, the things we're talking about, each one of those little steps is actually a huge leap. Every time we can help Oklahomans to work towards a more equitable system is a huge step. And it's also important to just keep saying, these are real people. And the numbers are so important, and it's so important for us to see the benefits. But at the end of the day, even just one Oklahoman helped, you know, we know it'll be more like hundreds of thousands by the end of all of this legislation. Even just one Oklahoman helped is helping to create a better system in a better state. And so get involved. We agree in any way that feels right for you. We're always here. Oklahoma Policy and their branches are always here to continue the education. I know both of our social media pages has been following all of these bills closely and giving people quick, digestible updates.
Yeah, I just want to talk about how important these reforms are, not only for criminal defendants, but for the entire state of Oklahoma. I think one of the things that we didn't speak on, how this will help standardize the fees assessed across counties. I think that's an important point to note. Right now, you can see that arrest location changes the amount of money owed by people pretty dramatically. So these reforms hopefully will standardize that across the state.
Across the board, it is differing in whether it comes to sentence length or fines and fees assessed. each county, unfortunately, at the moment is kind of doing their own thing, so to speak. And the rural urban aspect is affecting a lot of these issues as well. With that, I will pass it over to David if you have any parting words, anything you'd like to say.
I just want to say thanks again for having me on. And again, I encourage individuals to get involved, even if it is just one small piece of the criminal justice system that interests you or that may affect you or may affect family members. Get involved and try to make progress even on that one piece. Each of these pieces of legislation didn't just happen, didn't just come out of nowhere. It's taken the effort of so many people to get them as far as they've come so far. And so we need to continue that effort in so many different realms of the criminal justice system. So keep up the great work. I assume if you're listening to this, you're interested in criminal justice. Again, advocate, reach out to your lawmakers. It really does matter.
With that, we hope that you watch the rest of our episodes, and we hope to see you back next week.